Hi, this is Neil Funk, and you're listening to Frick on the Chicago Bullseye.
Hello, this is Nick Friedel, and you're listening to Frick on the Chicago Bullseye. Hi, this is Chuck Swirsky, and you're listening to Frick on the Chicago Bullseye.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Chicago Bullseye. We have a special episode for you today. Two titans of the Bullseye, Keith Franz from At Bull Scripted, and also the Bulls basketball historian, NBA historian, Tim Gallagher, both on the line. How you doing, brothers?
I'm doing well, Fred. It's looking forward to the holiday season here as we're in mid-November already.
Yes, Tim. How about you, Keith? How you doing, brother?
I'm doing great. Glad to have Tim on the call. He always brings a up-close insight that we don't always get.
Yeah, so you two are by far the two most popular guests we get the most positive feedback for. So it's great to have you both on the line at the same time. So let's get into it right away. The beloved, the Bulls, horrific loss at Boston. I'm, you know, quick to say, hey, I mean, this is expected. Again, we're missing four rotation players. We're playing a team that many feel is going to be the representative for the Eastern Conference in the Boston Celtics. What do you expect? You know, we had a nice first quarter, but it just devolved into a complete embarrassment. And I must admit, I watched the entire game. I felt like I got hit in the face with a mule. That second and third and fourth quarter were just a disaster to watch. So what say you? Let's start on first topic. Let's get into a little bit of Zach LaVine has taken, unfortunately, a little bit of a difficult stretch here. Last three games, he has not shot the ball well. Do you feel that this it's starting to get to him with the pressure that he's got to perform every night? Let's start out with you, Keith, and we'll get to you, Tim.
I don't know that I would say it was the pressure. I think he's kind of starting to lose his legs a little bit. You can see that in his jumper and when he's not getting the foul calls that he gets on some nights. You know, it kind of skews his field goal percentage because instead of going to the line for two and it not counting against him, it's counting against him and he's not getting the points. So I think a lot of it's him losing his legs. The other night, I think it was actually after the Dallas game, he mentioned Chris Dunn kind of started hinting at him about doing his flashier dunks in transition, that he hadn't seen any of that since Minnesota. And Zach actually made a comment that the windmill that he did may have taken his legs away from him on a couple of his jumpers throughout the rest of the night.
Oh my gosh, that's disturbing to hear. I did not hear that. Tim, what say you on Zach?
Well, I agree with Keith. I think he's been carrying such a heavy load with all the key guys that are out of the lineup. I mean, I'm so excited when Laurie gets back to see them paired together and to take some of that load off Zach's shoulders. And, you know, it's kind of funny. You talk about me as the basketball historian, and you didn't see a lot of guys dunk in the old days for showmanship or anything, but it also was because they were saving their legs, right? There was 48 minutes to play, and maybe there wasn't the depth and watching players' minutes like there is today. So some of it was economy of their bodies, you know, not so much what kind of showmanship could go on. But, you know, the other thing with LaVine, to his credit, he plays really hard. I mean, he may not be the greatest position defender all the time, but he is always busting his butt out there. So you can't say that it's for lack of determination and desire. I think the season's just wearing on him without much help. It's really him as the go-to guy. I mean, Parker's carried the load on occasion, you know, a few other guys here and there, but it's really all on him. So the defenses are keying on him, and that just has got to take its toll physically. And coming back from his injury, I've been a little bit worried just on the wear and tear of him, even though it's been great seeing him put up the numbers. And so far, the signing of him is totally justified, if there's any question at all. I mean, there can't be really.
Yeah, LaVine shooting. My big issue with LaVine and Parker, I mean, those are the only two guys that we can expect consistent scoring for. And regardless of how I feel about Parker, he's hit double digits in every game but one so far. The issue with these two guys is they're shooting the three so poorly, it's just absolutely killing the offense. Parker's down at 26%. This is a guy who was, you know, expected to shoot around 35 to 38% from three, and LaVine's down at 31. Both are approaching, you know, career lows. And when you got guys that aren't really hitting it that far out, hitting the three, it's so much easier to guard guys like that. You just sag off a little bit and just make sure they don't beat you at the rim. And once those guys start, I think, approaching their career average from the three-point line, I think you'll see it open up a little bit for them. But we're just so undermanned right now offensively. It's going to be rough, rough sledding for a while. That's why I don't understand people are just losing their minds. Again, it's – come on. I mean, what do you – I don't care if it's Golden State. You got four rotation players out. They're going to struggle. So it's just absolutely ridiculous for people to be, pulling their hair out here. Let's talk a little bit, though, guys, on – I mean, where do you think this team's at, like, right now with it, with four wins? Do you feel like when these guys come back and we start playing considerably better, is the playoffs out? I mean, should we just focus on the tank? Are you willing to say that right now? Or do you feel like, hey, let's see how we look when the guys come back? Let's start out with you on this one, Tim. We'll go to you, Keith.
Well, when I look at the East, and we'll probably talk about it in a little more detail, I think the top five teams in the East are pretty well established. Regardless of the seeding position, and we'll look at it right now, just it's Toronto, Milwaukee, Indiana, Boston, and Philly. I think those five are clearly the top five teams in the East. But after that, I really think it's totally wide open. And, the Bulls are only a couple of games back from those teams. And you look at Detroit, Charlotte, Orlando, Miami, the Nets, especially with LeVert getting hurt, there's no way they're going to be in the playoffs. The Wizards look like a mess, and I don't see that really turning around, although there's some possibilities just because of Wall and Beal, and they've had some playoff experience. So I'm for getting these guys back and trying to make a run at it, because I think a playoff spot is very realistic, and aside from those five teams, I think of a healthy Bulls team in the same light as all those other teams. And then, Detroit's, a decent team, but they've got a first-year coach. Charlotte's got a first-year coach. Orlando's got a first-year coach. So there's still a lot of development and adjusting. And, it's really, you got to think of it more of a marathon.
Back to you now, Keith. On the to tank or not to tank, are you ready to call it a day already, or do you want us to keep going for the playoffs?
I think the way the new lottery system is set up, that the Bulls are in the perfect position. Tanking outright is not nearly as beneficial as it used to be, and where the Bulls are, they could try their hardest and still fall 6-10 and get fairly good odds. I don't think a full-blown tank is necessary. I don't think taking the pride away from this core is a smart play either. We want to see development, and I think they should strictly focus that. See where the cards fall. Make the push as hard as you can and live with the results.
Keith, could you go a little bit into that just for my sake? Because I'm not sure I know exactly. I know the odds have changed. But basically, is it true that from 6 to 10, it's almost the exact same odds?
Okay, so now instead of three picks that were pulling ping pong balls or whatever system they're going to end up using this year, obviously there was the rumors of switching to a computer system last year. Now there's four spots that we're being picked four with the ping pong balls.
Okay.
And at sixth, with there being four spots now, you have a 37.2% chance from sixth to end up in the top four. Even 10th has a 13, close to 14% chance from that spot to land in the top four pick.
Hmm. Okay. So as long as you're in the top 10, the odds are
You got a 1 in 7, 1 in 8 chance. As long as you finish in the top 10, you're sitting pretty good to have, the odds to get lucky.
But if you don't get it, then you're at 10, basically. Is that right?
Downfall is there is higher percentages of falling back, and you can fall further back now because of the extra slot that's been added. So
yeah, I gotcha.
It's kind of a catch-22, but majority of the time, you will have a higher chance of staying put or moving up than you will of falling back.
Mm. Let's get a little bit into Fred's future. I do want to get your take on this too, Tim. With losses like last night, I do have a concern that they might. I mean, if we have several more of these type of losses where it's not even competitive and it's just an embarrassment within the first half, that I think Fred might be let go. I think it's a definitive possibility. Do you guys think I'm crazy on that, or do you feel that, hey, they're at least going to give him at least a month or two for when the big guns come back? Let's start out with you in this one, Tim.
Well, I've been surprised they've been competitive in as many games as they have been. I thought there would have been more games like last night at Boston. And last night was pretty much expected. So I'm giving Fred a pass just because of the depleted lineup. And when these four rotation guys get back, or at least a couple of them, I think he deserves a chance to see what he can do with that. Because I am seeing some positive momentum. I'm certainly more of a glass half full kind of Bulls follower, although a realist as well. But I think it's just too early in the season, and without the four rotation guys, I think we have to have a longer-term look at things, even for this season. And I know the dynamics are quite a bit different than the team last year, but I'm just thinking even when Nico came back and the Bulls went on that crazy streak, and you know when they were trying to tank. So I think something like that, I mean, again, that's just with Nico coming back last year. When you bring back Markkanen, Dunn, Portis, and Valentine, I mean, think of the possibilities with that.
Yeah,
so
good
I think
point.
Fred deserves a chance to have, you know, at least more of a core than that's been available so far.
What say you, Keith?
I say our current starting point guard, no disrespect to Archie, was the starting point guard for the Windy City Bulls last year at this time. So it's hard to be overly critical of Fred. He's kind of balancing a G League roster in Zach LaVine and Jabari Parker. If you don't have one of them on the floor, things go bad, and that's what we have continually seen in second quarters. So I think it's unfair to judge him. What we've heard Pac say on his radio appearances is as long as he's seeing improvements and he's seeing the coaches get through to the players in the facility and they're making progress there at this point, they're not counting on wins and losses still. It's almost impossible to with such a depleted roster.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, obviously, I'm on record for not being a big fan of Hoiberg, but I will say I think you at least have to give him a month after these guys come back. If we still see a downward trend, and I understand you're going to need a few weeks for these guys to, you know, learn how to mesh together and play better together. But if we're still having blowout losses, then I think he'll be removed pretty quickly, probably within 30 days. But he does at least – you got to wait till Markkanen gets back. I mean, Markkanen is a guy that people would tank for. So, I mean, it's not fair to – you got to at least have our best player for a while before you cut him loose. I want to talk a little bit about Wendell Carter Jr., who continues to impress me. I think he's got elite skills at guarding the rim defensively. I've just been blown away with how good he's been. Passing wise, just put this in perspective, he's got 32 assists in 393 minutes. To put that in perspective, our starting three, who's played 500, Justin Holiday, has played 534 minutes, has 34 assists. So I mean, he's actually passing like some of our wings in far less time. And I just everything about him besides his 3-point percentage, which is at 29.4, and I think that will improve, has just been impressive to me. What do you guys think on Wendell Carter Jr.? We'll start out with you, Keith, and then we'll go over to Tim.
If I read correctly earlier, he's on track to be the only teenager to ever average over two blocks in the NBA. So that's obviously a major accomplishment. I do kind of have a little bit of a, I don't like the Horford comparison because I feel like it puts a ceiling on him that I don't think is there. I get where the comparison comes from. I expect Wendell to be, you know, the epitome of a true pro and contribute to winning basketball in every facet like Al Horford. But at the end of the day, I think that's limiting this kid's potential. I don't know what we're going to see from this kid by the time he's 21 years old. And that's a good feeling to have.
What say you, Tim?
Well, I love him. And there's a lot of guys in this rookie class that I'm loving and enjoying my leap pass to check a lot of them out. So, the Horford comparison, I see a little bit of that. Another name that kind of came to mind as I'm watching him is kind of like a rich man's Derek Favors, and that's a floor for him. You know, and Derek Favors is a, you know, starter on a pretty good team in the West. So I see him at worst case being like that, and I think there's a lot more upside just because of his presence on the floor and shot blocking ability and just – I saw it in summer league and I wasn't sure how it was going to translate to regular season games, but just how comfortable he was on the floor, meaning that this is what I do. Bring it on. Let's play for a 19-year-old kid. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
And again, think of his supporting cast right now with all those guys missing that, you know, that, and, you know, that would have his back, so to speak. So
I do want to talk.
Love the pick.
I do want to talk a little bit about his quotes from yesterday's game, after yesterday's game, and I'll read it for any of those listeners who haven't heard it. It's not so much an offense or defensive thing. Just coming out of timeouts, we go our separate ways. Instead of huddling as a team, we only huddle when it's a timeout. And I feel that that's important, just to talk to one another and interact with one another throughout the game, so we get a feel for one another and know that we got each other's back. I feel like that's where we struggle right now. End quote. I'd like to go to you, Keith, on this one, because I saw you tweeted about this on Twitter. You know, basically said something to the effect, "I like it and I hate it." Could you expound on that a little bit for us, and then we'll go over to you, Tim, on this.
I love his awareness. I think that is a very valid point. I think it's blatantly obvious that without Chris Dunn and Bobby Portis, who I feel are this team's vocal leaders, without, you know, a real veteran presence there, especially with Rolo's regression and his inability to command that respect on the floor currently, there is a void there. But I also think from a rookie, depending on how it falls on his teammates, it definitely came off innocent. It was not malicious. The way he delivered it, he couldn't delivered it much better, but I also think that somebody like Zach LaVine could take that as a shot at him. We need leadership. And then Zach's probably like, I don't know what you guys want from me. I passed the ball the whole first half of the game last night and nobody made shots. So I feel because he's a rookie and he's only 19 years old, it could be taken the wrong way.
Tim, what say you?
Yeah, I wasn't bothered by it. I think he's used to winning, and you know, the competitive spirit kind of showed through there. You know, and again, I wasn't expecting good things last night in Boston. I'm looking at the Dallas game, which was a winnable game, and if I'm remembering correctly, I went back to my notes. So he got in very early foul trouble in that game, right, and was kind of taken out of action. Mm-hmm. But even then, he still had 10 rebounds and a plus 10 for the game in 26 minutes, but I think he had two fairly early fouls and was out of action. So that was a little bit frustrating. But I wasn't bothered by the comments. That's going to happen. And I'm with Keith there. I don't think it was done out of any disrespect or looking to stir things up. I think it's just some frustration and in the learning curve of a rookie that wants to win.
I loved it. I think he knows exactly what it takes to win, and I think he'll be that leader. You know, right now he's 19 years old. That's his only problem. Nobody's going to listen to a 19-year-old. But he's watching, he's learning, and he has all these intangibles. He's so far ahead. He's wise beyond his years. I love the kid, and I think he's going to be a great player, and he's going to demand that guys get together, and he'll be that guy, the center, doing these things that really make a difference in winning and losing. And as he grows and matures and gains respect from his teammates, but can't do it now. He's 19, right? I mean, it's just a fact of life. You know, nobody's going to listen to the rookie, but he knows. You can tell just by the stuff he says, he knows what it takes to win. I'm so excited we have this kid. Let's move on from the beloved for a while before I grow, you know, get further depressed. And let's talk about the trade with Jimmy Butler to the Philadelphia 76ers. I'd love to get your opinions on. You know, from Minnesota's perspective, from the Sixers' perspective, do you think it's going to work for the Sixers? And going back a little bit more, isn't this an unequivocal win for the Chicago Bulls when you realize what we got and what the Timberwolves got for Jimmy Butler? Let's start with you, Tim, on this one.
Well, it is pretty amazing when you think of the list of players that Jimmy Butler's been traded for in the last two seasons, right?
Right.
I mean, if you could take all those guys and have them be healthy and put a starting lineup out there, they'd probably be a pretty decent team. So I've kind of soured a little bit on Jimmy, just that from my view, and it's probably a little unfair broad brush, but to me, he went from this workmanlike, you know, scrappy junior college player, fought his way through to Marquette, last pick of the first round, self-made player to kind of this prima donna, right? And, you know, sitting out, is he hurt or is he not hurt, demanding trades. You know, that didn't happen so much with the Bulls, but although he kind of let me down a little bit in that Boston series, which we've talked about before.
No doubt.
But so I'm just surprised that he's commanded this much attention. He's a very good player and, you know, did a lot of great things and developed with the Bulls, but as far as the trade for me, I saw the Sixers as a three seed before the trade, and I see him as a three seed still. I think Boston's playing a little below their potential right now. I think they'll move up to probably the two seed, and Toronto, if Kawhi stays healthy, it looks like they're headed to the number one seed, and Milwaukee certainly could be up there as well. So I don't see the Sixers surpassing any of those teams. I could see them passing Indiana, but again, they're still in that top five. But I don't see the trade lifting them to some dramatic level of winning the Eastern Conference now with Jimmy on board.
What say you, Keith?
I kind of like the move for Philly. They have a window that they need to achieve, and they're swinging for it. You kind of have to applaud them for that. I think Jimmy fits a Philly mentality. I think he'll get along with Simmons and Embiid as long as him and Embiid don't clash for being too much alike. They both like the spotlight. They both like attention. I feel as long as that doesn't become a problem, that they'll be able to work the on-court stuff out. All three of them are fairly good defenders. That's a positive. You know, if they just need to find some shooting, maybe we can help them out with Justin Holiday and get our second round pick back from them. But I think this whole situation kind of points to the coach GM thing not really being the greatest thing. I feel the coaches having the power are too close to the situation, and we knew Tibbs wasn't going to take back rookies and future prospects and future picks. He was going to get players that are going to play now, and he played Robert Covington 41 minutes in his first game. So welcome to Minnesota.
There you go. I want to take a step back to June of 2017, and I think at that time, if you asked the majority of people in the NBA, who are the two best young players, the best tandem young players in the NBA? And I think without a doubt, people would say Towns and Wiggins, or, you know, Embiid and Simmons. Maybe not Simmons yet, because that was his rookie year, right? That was before he started playing. Step back now. I mean, is there any doubt it's Embiid and Simmons? So he's gone to one team, and kind of, I think, by joining the Timberwolves for whatever reason, Towns took a step back, and he's definitely not where he was viewed by the majority of the league before last year. And Wiggins took a much further step back. And we'll see how it goes here in Philadelphia. His first game in, they lose to Orlando. I think it was a great move for Philly. Like, I think that's what they had to do. They have a window here until they have to pay Simmons. You better make it happen. This ongoing process is such a nonsense thing. The process is over. You have to make it happen now. And you just watched a team in Milwaukee surpass you. They were much better than 76ers this year for whatever reason. So, you know, I do laugh at Brown giving credit to Hinkie and saying, you know, he's a big reason that we're in at this point. And I'm like, yeah, he is a big reason. If he wasn't so stupid, if he wasn't the only GM to let Giannis get drafted, pass on Giannis twice, Milwaukee wouldn't have surpassed him, and they wouldn't be at that. You can talk all you want. I just think it's so insane here that people still continually justify the absolute nonsense that went on for four-plus seasons for the 76ers. Just, it doesn't take talent to suck. It doesn't take talent to put yourself in a position to be the worst team in the NBA and get lucky and win the lottery. He didn't take draft Simmons, number one, but, you know, just to be so bad that you win a lottery. It's just such a joke that people continue to look back at that period with admiration. These are two of his pieces, Covington and Saric. No one in the world believes those guys are ever going to make an all-star team, and they won't. So what are we talking about? He had one great pick. He missed on Okafor. He missed on Noel. He missed on Michael Carter Williams. I mean, come on. You know, in retrospect, I just don't believe that the people continue to make justification for Sam Hinkie. What say you guys? Let's start out with you on this one, Tim.
No matter how it unraveled, he did manage to get Embiid and Simmons, who are very dynamic players. And I'm probably not the best guy to be on the Philadelphia bandwagon, because I'm not a hater of those guys. They're very talented and have some incredible nights. But I just don't think they're as far along as everyone says as far as challenging to win the Eastern Conference. The other thing is, I know – and this kind of is off the subject of Hinkie a little bit, but I know you can't sign everybody, but I think Philly losing Ilyasova, and he's playing great for Milwaukee, Bilinelli to back to the Spurs. I think losing some key veterans that, you know, helped them make their late season run and play pretty respectably in the playoffs. They're going to really miss those guys. So it's, you know, they've got the big three now, but it's the supporting cast. And, you know, Covington turned into a really nice NBA player. Saric had his moments. So they're not all stars, like you said. But I'm just really will be interested to see if Philly can keep the momentum, you know, win their 55 games or whatever the, you know, the projections were, you know, with the big three and not a strong supporting cast.
What say you, Keith?
I kind of tend to lean where you do. Well, I do think tanking can be effective. I don't think the 76ers executed it the greatest. Obviously, if they don't miss the picks they miss, they're probably not in the position to get Embiid and Simmons. So, like everything in life, it all was relative to their process, and they are where they are because of their mistakes as well. But they've made a lot of mistakes. You go back to last year, trading Jahlil Okafor, Nick Stauskas in a second-round pick for Trevor Booker, who they later waived for their team to add who Tim brought up in Ilya Silva and Marco Bellinelli. So they don't make the greatest moves all the time, and I think they get a lot of credit for being inept, and I don't know why you'd want that to be your model.
Yeah, good, really good point. I mean, that obviously isn't on Hinkie, but, I mean, just going to the Fultz thing, I mean, where he's at right now is – insane. And I know, Tim, you were not high in Fultz. I was not high in Fultz. I mean, I had him in the top 10, but I didn't think he was the number one overall pick. He is just it's unbelievable where he's at right now with the double clutching on the free throws. It's sad. I think his career is seriously in jeopardy. You can't play basketball and shoot like that unless you're Ben Simmons, you know, and have something else that you could bring. And incredible athleticism and height and vision for passing, and he doesn't have that. So let's talk about that really quick. Would you, as Chicago Bulls, I've heard a number of people bring this up, would you look at making a deal for Fultz, or would you say stay away, as far away as possible? What say you, Keith, on that, and we'll go to you, Tim.
See, I think if you can buy low the season that the Bulls' direction is headed, you might as well take the risk. We've tried every other point guard in the NBA on this point guard carousel of ours since Rose's injury. So why not add one more to the mix? But I also kind of lean the way of it is a high risk. So it's a fine line. If you can't buy low, you're probably better off just getting future draft picks of your own if you're able to make that kind of deal.
Tim?
You're saying possible Bulls acquisition of Fultz? Is that
yes.
The question?
Yeah, that's come up a few times.
Oh, gosh. No, please no.
I'm not
a Fultz guy. I saw, you know, his freshman year at Washington. I watched him quite a bit. The one game I was supposed to see him in person, he was quote-unquote injured, although I think he was – I'm convinced he was just being hidden, basically.
Sitting
because they didn't want to damage his draft stock. And he may have been hurt, but if Washington had a good team and was trying to make a run to get in the NCAA tournament, I'm certain he would have played. I would try to find somebody in the G League to cover the point guard duties ahead of trying to make a trade for Fultz.
Let's go over to Golden State and get into the latest topic at hand, which is all over the NBA about the fight between Durant and Draymond Green. Where do you guys land and who was right and who was wrong in that situation? And do you feel that this will basically ensure that Durant does not stay re-sign at Golden State next year? Tim, let's start with you on this one.
Well, I was watching that game. And actually, the Clippers have been pretty fun to watch this year.
Agreed.
I know it's a little later time zone, so it's a little more in my sweet spot. And I'm I may be joining the Shea Gilgeous-Alexander fan club here pretty soon. He's a lot of fun to watch. But anyway, it was one of those plays, first of all, where, you know, I like when coaches don't call a timeout, you know, don't let the defense set up. Golden State obviously has some playmakers. I did see where Durant was kind of clapping. Hey, give me the ball. Let me do it. But can't be the first time Draymond's looked off, Curry or Thompson or Durant, right? And
yeah,
I just think the whole thing was way overblown. And in an odd way, I think Steve Kerr actually welcomes some of this kind of adversity just to make the season a little more challenging for them. Although tonight, before we jumped on this call, I saw they're getting their butts kicked at Houston, and Curry and Cousins and those guys are laughing on the bench, which maybe, it's just, I know that's one little moment in time, but I don't know. I just,
not good. That's
a little concerning that they're just laughing off, getting blown out on the road. But I don't think it'll have any impact on what Durant tries to do. And I think this is just a little tiny blip in the radar of a full NBA season.
Do you think he's back next year? Or do you think he resigns?
My intuition is that he'll stay. He looks like, they're still winning 80% of their games, even with, one of, key guys out. Either seems like Green's out or Curry's out, so even without their full lineup, they're still mostly winning. So I think they'll keep this thing rolling. They're moving into a new arena. So, that's going to mean additional cash flow for the ownership of that team. So I don't see him leaving.
Keith.
I think Draymond was in the wrong. Obviously, it's easy to say that now after he looked KD off. He did kind of go fall on his face and lead them to an overtime loss. So I can understand the frustration, and I think Draymond was straight up deflecting. He was getting chewed out like he does to his teammates, and that's his role. He's the vocal leader on that team, and people accept that criticism, but he didn't seem too willing to take that criticism, and he flipped it on Kevin Durant and made it personal. So I think they'll be fine. Draymond said it today, offseason really doesn't matter until the offseason. We have this year ahead of us, and that's the only thing that matters. I think KD is gone anyway. I think he wants another challenge. If they blow the three-peat, they're going to, he's going to get slandered for being a snake and taking the easy route and then blowing it. Still, and if he wins it, they're going to be like, well, why are you staying? So I feel he's a very impressionable person. I think he's going to tackle a new challenge.
So let's get to that in 1 second. Just let me get my thoughts on what happened here. Jackie McMillan had a great participated in the Brian Windhorst and the Who Collective, which is a podcast I recommend listening to. And they went into this situation pretty extensively. And Jackie McMillan brought up the point that Draymond Green really went overboard. I mean, every one of the players who was in the locker room, everyone felt that it was well deserved that he was suspended, that he went well beyond where he should have got in ripping on Kevin Durant. So I believe that. I think Draymond Green, personally, to me, is one of the most lucky players ever to join the NBA. I think if he would have fallen on any other team, he wouldn't be held anywhere near the status that he is today. He happened to join a team with two of the best shooters of all time, and it just happened to mesh perfectly with his game. He's a great defender, but as we all know, defense, it doesn't necessarily get you paid, or it definitely doesn't get you held in the highest regard if you don't have an equivalent offensive game. So anyhow, I digress. So I think he's gone. I think Durant's gone, which brings me to the next question: is if you look around, where's the possible destination? I keep on hearing people say the Knicks, and how are the Knicks a better situation than the Chicago Bulls, if you look at that team? Why are they a better place for him to end up? If you look at all the teams in the NBA, the young teams, and this is why it is important to me that the Bulls at least make a late season run, but be a lot more competitive. I think if they do happen to get the 7 or 8 spot with the young players they have, Durant could easily slide into that 3 position. And he would be the missing link. I mean, that team, I think, would, with Dunn, Levine at the 2, Durant at the 3, Markkanen and Wendell Carter Jr. would be a contender in the East. What say you? Let's start with you on this one, Keith.
I mean, I think that's a no-brainer. Durant's at least a top, well, we'll go 5 to be safe, to not ruffle anybody's feathers, player in the NBA. I put him in the top 3 minimally. I think he instantly makes your team a contender. And with the young core and the cap flexibility that they have, obviously that's the idea of the plan, is to have the flexibility, have the young contracts to open that window and draw in hopefully a top 5 player. So I yes, that would be where a else, no-brainer.
Yeah, where else would you see him potentially going? Like, what else is a better situation than Chicago?
The Lakers.
Yeah, but he would be, as you said, he cares about what people say about him, And to go from Golden State, where to join, you know, arguably the best player in this generation, wouldn't he still be? I guess a lot depends on how bad the Lakers finish the season, right? I guess, but you know, isn't that a huge critic? Wouldn't that be a potential criticism of him just joining again with another superstar? I guess.
I agree with you on both fronts. I don't think the Knicks are a better location to land on the Bulls, especially with Kristaps Porzingis' future up in the air. He's really their only main piece that would be a draw, and because of his injury and the mystery around it currently, who knows what's going to happen there in New York. Right now, their best player might be Alonzo Trier, who is an undrafted rookie this year.
Insane. What say you, Tim? Am I missing a location for Durant outside of Golden, you know, if he doesn't chooses not to resign with Golden State?
Well, you know, I know I originally said that I thought he'd stay with the Warriors, which I'm still leaning that way, but I thought Keith's points about, you know, how this season plays out, whether they win or lose, there's a, you know, there's kind of an avenue for him to move on. You know, I still, if you've been listening to me on these podcasts over the last few years, I'm always thinking about Jerry West and his influence and what he's got going at the Clippers. And he obviously talked to Durant and helped get him to Golden State. So the Clippers have done a pretty nice job of cleaning house and, you know, getting rid of Griffin, Chris Paul, Jordan. They've got a pretty nice young core of solid pros, and Jerry West and Ballmer are, you know, are a pretty class organization. So it's LA. You know, I can see Jerry West looking in Durant's eye and saying, "Hey, you know, we're about winning here. We've got, you know, Gilgeous Alexander and some other young talent. We've got some pros that know what to do. Guys like Gallinari and Avery Bradley, and Tobias Harris is a pretty solid and emerging young talent. I guess not so young anymore. So I'd say the Clippers might have an outside shot at it, mainly because of the Jerry West factor, and it's LA.
Great call. That is true. Let's get to close this up. Let's get a little bit in the league as a whole right now. There's a lot of surprises, a ton of surprises. The Kings are in the playoffs. The season ended today at 8-6 in the West. You know, obviously the Wizards playing far worse, although they have won three in a row. Started out far worse than we expected. Tim, let's start with you on this one. What are some of your big surprises in the West and surprises in the East?
Well, in the West, I think the biggest surprise is how poorly the Rockets have done so far. And I know Harden missed some games due to injury. You know, then there was the fight. Then obviously they've figured out that Carmelo can't play anymore. So I know they've kind of turned things around a little bit with beating Golden State tonight. That's the three wins in a row, and they're back at 500. So I've been surprised how poorly they've done. But I think they are obviously going to be a playoff team and probably inch their way up to the top, obviously not surpassing Golden State. I would say the Grizzlies have been a little bit of a surprise to me as well. Jaren Jackson, I mean, we've been talking about Wendell Carter Jr. Jaren Jackson looks like everything we thought he was going to be as well as a rookie. And then obviously having a healthy Mike Conley and Gasol is a pretty solid group. And I'm surprised they're as high over 500 as they are, and a lot of the credit is to Jackson. So that's kind of the biggest surprise for a disappointment and biggest surprise of a team playing a little better than I thought. In the East, the Wizards have been a pretty big disappointment, although when you really pick apart their roster, it's not that shocking. And it's just their chemistry on the floor and just what I've watched of them has been pretty unsettling. But I'd say a bigger disappointment is Cleveland. Obviously, Kevin Love's injury hurt, but I know for a time we were thinking that they kept a lot of their veteran core and people thought Sexton was going to step in and do well. And, you know, I didn't think they'd be 10 games under 500. We kind of thought maybe they'd be challenging for a playoff spot, and obviously they're way, way out of that. And then I'd say the Raptors have been the biggest surprise. You know, the trade and Kawhi's health was pretty uncertain, and then a rookie coach and Nick Nurse. And I think also just the impressive development of some of their young guys like Siakam and Obi and Van Vliet, you know, just the role players, and then Valanciunas coming off the bench. So a lot of variables there that were a lot different from the success they've had in recent years. I mean, don't forget they were the number one seed last year in the East. But with all the shakeup, they're right back there again.
Yeah. Keith, what about you?
For me, out west, I was really expecting Phoenix to take a step after adding Trevor Ariza and trading up for Mikal Bridges and getting the number one pick in the draft. I kind of felt, you know, they were pushing to take a step. Obviously, they've yet to find a legitimate point guard for their team, and I'm sure that has something to do with it. But I did not expect them to be worse than the Bulls at this point. The Kings, the happy surprise out in the west, obviously. Boston gets their draft pick, anything outside of the first pick, and if it's the first pick, Philly gets it. So everybody that isn't a Boston or a Philly fan should be rooting for the Kings this year.
Amen.
But then out east, I think the biggest surprise has to be the Wizards, just because they are a perennial playoff team and a rather wide open east outside of the five teams that Tim pointed out earlier. Detroit, I had a feeling was going to be definitely in the mix for the playoffs. They've kind of been 50-50. And then, I don't know, maybe Orlando, just because they're doing better than us. Obviously, we got a whole bunch of injuries, but I don't know. I didn't expect them to be around a 500 team out the gate either.
Yeah, I'll say the Bucks have been the biggest surprise for me, playing much better than I expected. I knew they'd be improved with a better coach. I didn't expect them to be 10-4 improved, and, you know, clearly probably better than the 76ers. They have performed much better than the 76ers and the Celtics. I think the Celtics have been a surprise too. Obviously, they destroyed the beloved Bull, but they're 8-6 overall, and they have not played well. I think Tatum's taken a step back. I think a lot of guys on that team have taken a step back. They're not defending as well as they did last year, and I'm not really sure what's wrong. You know, it's hard to say. You know, I'm sure they'll get the ship righted, but I still believe the Raptors are a team to beat in the East, and I said that I've been believing in that team for a while, and they've really done nothing to change my opinion. The other big surprise for me in the West is the Trailblazers, 10-4. I thought they'd take a step back, and they played extremely well. So there's only three teams left in the NBA who have not won a road game. Can you guys name them? A little quiz as we close this up. Take a guess who those three teams are.
Chicago's probably one of them.
No, the Bulls won a road game. They beat the Knicks.
That's right. Oh, that's right. We had that double overtime thriller.
Woo-hoo. Yeah, there we go. Exactly. And then, no, they beat Atlanta, too. They got two wins on the road.
Okay.
I'll tell you, the team.
How about Cleveland, Phoenix?
Phoenix, that's right. Cleveland, Phoenix, and the T-Wolves are 0-8 on the road. 0-8. So there's only three teams left with no road wins. You know, I'm sure the T-Wolves, it's going to be interesting to watch the Timberwolves for the rest of the season. I mean, they obviously have some talent. Do you guys feel, to wrap this show up, though, with the trade, does that signal the end for that team making the playoffs? We'll start with you, Keith, and we'll close up with you, Tim.
I think they missed the playoffs. Obviously, Towns and Wiggins last night, towards the end of the game, looked more like the prospects people thought they were. They were more assertive. So maybe addition by subtraction will work for them, but I think they fall short of the playoffs, and maybe they try to steal Hoiberg from us, from what I'm hearing, with their owner Taylor's affection for him.
Oh, yeah, that's right. What a story.
I did see that. That was, which would be an interesting way to gracefully exit Fred if it does come to that. Yeah, I don't think Minnesota will make the playoffs. You know, as I'm looking at the West right now, I've got the teams 9 through 12, so the Spurs, Jazz, Pelicans, and Rockets. I've got them all bracketed. Those teams are all going to make the playoffs, so I don't know how it's going to shuffle everybody 1 through 8 right now. I mean, I think the Kings will probably be one that's an obvious slip, maybe Memphis. But so there's no way Minnesota is going to get there, because I've got four teams ahead of them that are out of the playoffs now getting in.
Yeah, you still got to feel the Rockets are going to make the playoffs, right? You still got to the Jazz. Yeah, I still can't believe
it. Spurs, Jazz, Pelicans, and Rockets, those four. So yeah. I can't imagine
it's
those four teams not being in the playoffs unless Anthony Davis gets hurt or, you know, there's some catastrophic thing. But
can you imagine this scenario, though, like as Keith referred to, the owner, Taylor of the Timberwolves, loves Fred Hoiberg, who was a former executive there. If Tibbs gets fired, the Bulls fire Hoiberg, and he ends up coaching the Timberwolves, two locations Tom Thibodeau will be fired from, and Fred Hoiberg replaces him in both locations. What were the odds of that?
Probably Timberwolves forever.
Trillion to one, I'd say. Unbelievable if that happens. Unbelievable. Guys, it's been a pleasure. We got to do this more often. I loved it. A lot of great insights from both of you. And, you know, the schedule looks pretty awful going forward here for the beloved Bull. I don't see many wins in the next five, six games. Do you guys feel like there's any chance that by the time marketing comes back that we're going to have seven wins? Can we make that prediction right now? Yes or no?
Give me the timetable on the returns of these guys. Do you know, or approximately?
Keith, do you know? I've been so frustrated.
They're all kind of looking around early December. Lowry, as they were talking about last night, did successfully start taking threes without any pain afterwards. They had the video of him dunking on Wendell's head. Yeah. I believe this is week
seven.
Seven or eight that he's been out. They're saying 9 to 11 or 12 now, and obviously the 11 or 12 are more precautionary. I haven't heard more updates about Dunn and Portis, and obviously with meniscus injuries, it could be longer.
Yeah, and it sounds like Valentine took a step back. So Valentine, I have a feeling now he'll probably be the last guy to come back, you know, probably January, February. Who knows? You know, it's so sad and unfortunate what's happened to that kid. But, you know, the Dunn one is still one I keep on saying, like, it didn't look like a serious injury, you know, and they said 4 to 6 weeks. It's already been, what, 4 weeks, right? And I don't hear anything. I don't hear anything where he's at. So it's kind of frustrating. You see him on the bench, and you see Portis. He said he can't move laterally. So, you know, hopefully these guys will come back sooner than later, but I guess there is no rush right now. But we do need those guys. My goodness, this has not been good without them. Anyhow, gentlemen. Have a great evening. Enjoy the basketball. And looking forward to talking to you guys again very soon.
Sounds great. Okay, Fred. See you, Keith.
Yep, you both have a good night.
Have a good one, guys. Bye-bye.